from the wilds of southern Jersey to share her strength and experience for us. So, you're going to... Oh, good for you. Then I don't have to do that. She's prepared. So, if you would tell us what works for you, Siobhan, and I guess... There you go. You have a half now.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Christina already knows, but I am without coffee or food this morning because I have to go to the oral surgeon. Oh, thank you. So, if I look like I'm suffering and going to pass out, it probably is because I'm going to. So, anyway, I was thinking a little bit this morning about what I would talk about, and I was thinking, you know, it's funny. My life is like a history of diets. You know, it was like there was this time, but the funny thing about it is when I look back, I'll start at the beginning so it makes sense. So as far as being like a kid, I was a very skinny kid until I was about 10, and then whoops, I don't know what happened. And I wasn't like a huge fat kid, but I was definitely, you know, I had a gut, I was a little chunky. And, for whatever reason, my mom really picked up on that. So the mantra sort of became, well, Siobhan has to control her stomach muscles. That was the thing I kept hearing over and over again. You gotta suck it in. And it was like, you know, I'm 10, I'm 11, and it was like I was just being harangued about my weight. And when I look back now, I wasn't like a big fat kid. I was like that girl from Little Miss Sunshine, I think. You know, I was just a kid with a pot belly. So I think it made me sensitive to body image and weight and stuff like that. And I knew that I was different from my siblings who did not have this problem. But, you know, I was still growing, and when I was in junior high, I had shot up, I mean, not too high, but a little bit taller. So, you know, my weight went down, whatever. I wasn't really cognizant of knowing how to diet at that point, but I do remember walking through the neighborhood, and this was when a lot of the moms still weren't working, and one of the moms says, oh, look at her, she used to be so skinny. And I was like, oh no, this it can't be good. So I was like horrified. So I just sort of, you know, early on that sensitivity, self-consciousness of weight was there. So anyhow, I wasted a lot of time worrying about my weight, you know, which isn't uncommon, but you know, food. I was not an obese teenager. I wouldn't become obese until I was in my 30s. But food was definitely, you know, my grandmother would come to visit and she would have tea and cookies for us, you know, so food was definitely, it was pleasant, it was an escape, it was nice. You know, my mom was not around a lot of the time, so we did, you know, I would cook for myself, whatever. So food was something that I turned to for comfort at that point. And then I think as I was in my teens and definitely by my 20s, I had started the pattern of, you know, gaining some weight, then losing it, and then gaining some more. The first big weight loss that I had, I mean, I had been on diets as a teenager, but I think I was probably... I'm not really sure how old I was. I think I was about 20, and I probably lost about 30 pounds, whatever. And it was like, it was terrible. I was on SlimFast for 3 months. So I had SlimFast all day long, and then one little Weight Watchers for dinner. I mean, crazy restricting, and I did that for like 3 months. So I managed to lose a chunk of weight, and by then I was crazy. And by that I mean... I think I dieted my way down to like 103 pounds, which, you know, I'm not tall, but that's crazy. And yet when people would comment on my weight, because people do, you know, they'd say, oh, you're so skinny. And I'd be like, what, are you crazy? You know, don't you see these thighs? Like, what's the matter with you? So I definitely had some body dysmorphia going on there. And was not comfortable physically, let's put it that way. I was highly motivated to control my weight, and definitely had periods of time where I was in control of my weight, you know, sort of like they reference in the big book. You know, But despite these periods of control, it would never last. So, you know, when I was in college, I wasn't especially overweight. I would say I was normal weight, but I was in a school of the arts, actually. And I remember one of the dance teachers telling me, you know, why don't you just lose weight? And, you know, now when I look back, it makes me really angry because I think I was about 128 pounds. And it's like, it's just a sick, you know, whatever. I mean, I was normal, I was healthy, but, you know, in my mind, I was fat. So, you know, then I started with the jogging and dieting and blah, blah, blah. And I also was involved in a relationship for a length of time where it was very clear that I was not to become overweight. That was not acceptable. And so there was a lot of passive aggressiveness there. Because my weight would go up and then back down and then up and then back down. And I was losing, you know, I kept losing ground, let's put it that way. So, you know, then I'd go up to, like, let's say 165 and then down and blah, 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 whatever. The numbers don't really matter, but the point is it was progressing. My food issues were progressing. I had done Joni Craig a couple times. I was a lifetime member. I did Weight Watchers. And, you know, Weight Watchers was crazy because I'd go in and get weight on Saturday. And then I'd go out and binge because I had a whole week to make up the difference. And, you know, sometimes if I only gained, like, you know, maybe I got away with, like, 0.2 weight gain, then I figured, well, that's good. You know, I can get away with it, you know, another week, whatever. So definitely engaged in crazy behavior. You know, I don't know. I guess when I was in my 30s, it got considerably worse, and then I was into obese. And, you know, my doctor kept warning me, like, oh, your knees, oh, your heart, you got to cut it out, whatever. And, you know, I just, I guess what basically happened was I always thought that, you know, I've always been able to lose it in the past. You know, I thought I just liked to eat. I didn't really think that I had a problem with food. And I didn't really wake up to that until I blew past the 200-pound mark. And I'm not really sure what my highest weight was. My highest known weight was 214 pounds. I do remember that. And I thought, yeah, middleweight champion of the world. Too bad I'm 5'2". So anyway, I really don't know because, I mean, weighing myself was something that I had stopped doing. I didn't want to know. I mean, once I went over 200 pounds, I was pretty horrified. To me, that was like a magic number. I mean, everyone has their magic number. For me, that was 200. But anyway, I was well past it. And, you know, constantly having to buy new clothes and what have you. Anyway, I went to a work event, and they took photographs afterwards and posted them on the web. And when I looked and saw a picture of myself, I was really shocked and horrified. I just could not believe how big that I had gotten. I was huge. And but still not realizing that I was having a problem with food. I mean, I knew I liked to eat, and I was not really a secret eater. So I guess that was a way that I told myself that my eating was okay because I wasn't secret about it. I mean, of course, I lived alone, so didn't have to work that hard. No one really knew. But in other words, I didn't like eat like a salad in front of other people. I mean, I had an appetite, but whatever. I told myself a lot of things. You know, I told myself there had been a period of time when I was using laxatives, but I figured, well, since I'm not throwing up, then it's okay, because this is how my sick mind was working. And in any event, so of course went on another diet, whatever, tried to lose some weight. I think I lost some of it, like, I don't know, maybe 30 pounds, but then, you know, then whoop, you know, right back up again. And then stayed big for probably 5 or 6 years. And during that 5 or 6 years, I was very much in denial. I wasn't really seeing that I had a problem with food. I thought that I just didn't give a shit. And I suppose there were times when I felt like I didn't give a shit, but there were definitely times when I did. So it was, you know, whatever. I guess a few things happened in my life at one time that sort of made me realize, like, I do have a problem. Because I had started binging more and more frequently, and my binges were getting larger and larger, And I was starting to engage in the more sort of extreme behavior. I mean, it's all relative, I guess, but leaving the house at 11 o'clock at night when it's like snowing because I got to get my food, you know, like just crazy behavior. Mm. And, you know, at work, I was sort of suffering because I had sized out of all my clothes, and it's very hard to find professional looking clothes when you're sized for whatever, you know, so I was wearing the same black pants like every day. And you know, we all eat lunch together. So, and I can just remember walking down the hall towards lunch, just being so humiliated because of my physical self. Like no one was mean to me because of my weight, but I just was like, you know, not feeling good. And I worked in the city, so I'd like sneak downstairs before lunch and go get whatever junk from downstairs, you know, to get through the day because I was bored and irritated and restless and all those things. You know, I had a couple of friends. I went to like a yoga retreat actually with my sister. I'll tell you that story first. So we went to this yoga retreat, and my sister has never had a weight problem. I mean, she thinks she does, but it's like whatever, 10 pounds, you know, a weekend for us. And she kept dragging me up and downstairs. And I'm like, yo, I can't keep going up and down these stairs. I'm like, for you, it's nothing, but this is like, you're killing me. And I realized, like, she really didn't understand what it was like to be in that body, to have to move that body up the stairs. And so I remember talking. She didn't bring it up, but I was saying, yeah, you know, I'm going to lose weight. I'm getting ready to lose weight. You know, this is just a temporary situation. And it sort of started the thought process, like, you know, what's going on with me? And then, you know, later, as the binging was getting worse and worse, I had a couple of friends who asked me in kindness, people who did not have food problems as far as I know, who were like, well, how come you can't lose weight? And, you know, my response was either to sort of growl at them or just to mumble something, you know, whatever. But the point is, I mean, it's not like they made me do anything, they didn't, but they did make me think. So I was like, you know, why can't I lose weight? I had to admit that I really couldn't. I could not. Mm-mm, not happening. Couldn't go on a diet for a day. Wasn't happening. And, you know, besides just the food issues and the weight issues, which of course are their own party, you know, my personal life was a mess and had been a mess for a very long time. And I was aware of that. I knew it. But I didn't know what to do about it. And I didn't know until I came to program about walking around with all these resentments was doing to me, because I had a lot of resentments, and it was a big part of why I was eating compulsively. So, in any event, I came to OA on March 4th, 2014. At that point, I was aware, I had already taken step one. I was there. I knew that I was not in control of my food. I could not stop binging. It was frightening me. I couldn't lose weight, and I happened to be personally miserable. For anyone who's heard this story before, I apologize, but in any event, I was half my family was down in Florida, and my younger sister, who I was very close to, and her children, who I was also very close to, decided to go to Florida, and this really flipped me out, because I felt that she was abandoning me, and I was pissed off, and I was upset, and I was so sick that I actually offered her my house. I was like, you can have a house, I'll go couch surfing, because I'm single, I don't care, just find somebody who'll take my pet. And the answer was no, she wasn't going to do it. So, you know, I was very very devastated by this loss, and you know, part of the reason, there's a few reasons why I was so sort of whatever attached to my sister. I mean, attached to her children, that's understandable because I didn't have any kids, but you know, a lot of the friendships that I had were not healthy, and I didn't recognize it. It was you know, these things have become more apparent to me in program, and there's certain people that I'm not friends with anymore because I'm worth, you know, a mutual healthy relationship, and I'm not chasing anybody anymore. I'll forget it. So that was one reason. You know, the other reason was, as kids, Both of our parents were alcoholics, so as all of us as children were very sort of tight together because of the dynamic that created. And actually, my parents' alcoholism, I think, has helped me very much in my thought process towards recovery. So enough of that nonsense. So when I came into OA, I learned about the tools, and so I was thinking about my food plan and what should I do and all that stuff. And so I tried to get abstinent, and I think I put together like three, maybe four weeks or whatever, and then went down to my sister-in-law's house and had something I shouldn't have had. And then, of course, since I had that, I might as well just have the rest of it. So, you know, came home and binged like that. And, you know, that was the last time, thank God, you know, as of today. And the next day I went to a meeting and I got a sponsor and started to work the steps. Now, I've done the steps a couple of times. I'm actually 2.5 times now. The first time I didn't really get it at all because, I was like, well, harms? What harms? I haven't really harmed that many people. You know, I don't feel guilty. That's, I don't know. So, I mean, I gave it a shot, but I don't know that I got that much out of it the first time. Attempting and maybe not getting it is better than not attempting at all. And I think that recovery is an ongoing process, so whatever. So I'm doing it again. But in any event, I was also very lucky because, and I know that some of, I think, I'm pretty sure the two of you were there. I think I had been in OA for whatever, 2 or 3 months, and I went down to South Jersey and I heard Laurie C. speak. And he spoke about the 12 steps, and he spoke about abstinence, and he spoke about a whole bunch of stuff. And what he said made a whole lot of sense to me when I sort of, because it's hard for me to see my own behaviors, even still, like when I'm, you know, doing step work, step 10, whatever, step 11, it's still hard for me to see my stuff. It's good to know, so perfect. But when I look at, so when he spoke about, you know, what does it mean to be abstinent, you know, he said it took him 9 years. Like he would lose weight and then go back to eating whatever foods in moderation, and then of course, because he's compulsive overeater, he can't do that. So it basically got down to the red light, green light, yellow light foods, which that made a lot of sense to me because I was like, yes, like the alcoholic is lucky. They know they can't drink alcohol. That's pretty black and white. With the food situation, it's maybe not as black and white. And black and white thinking is not always your friend, but sometimes it can be. So I tried to come up with my list of red light foods, and they were red light foods, and I treat them as alcohol, meaning no, none, and never. Don't have them. And with some skepticism, I also decided to give them sugar. That was more, I guess I would call that a leap of faith, because I didn't understand why everyone was always talking about sugar, which is hysterical to me now, because I realized that I was totally pounding sugar constantly. And, sugar is very addictive no matter what, you know. So, what he said in terms of, you know, not having the, like, one of the things I took away was that he said he never binged on radishes. And I was like, yeah, that's true. I've never binged on radishes. You know, maybe somebody has, but I haven't. And I guess the sort of thing that I've come up with now is if a food makes me feel like get up and dance, then maybe it should be on my red list. If it's a food that I can hum along with to the music, then it could be okay. So so in terms of the initial physical, you know, I went through a physical withdrawal, and that I definitely felt. And after, you know, having gone through that, I did feel not all, but quite a bit of my cravings had dissipated. So, you know, I understood that that wasn't it, because after the physical, then there's the mental obsession, which could certainly kick in. So, you know, the other thing that Laurie C. Harps on quite a bit is the fact that, you know, once you put the food down, you need to work the steps so that you can keep it down. I went through the steps the second time, and I definitely got a lot more out of it the second time, because I was able this time to look at my own behavior. And having read the big book and talking about, you know, how resentment is the number one can be like the number one factor killer or whatever. I mean, that certainly I related to that. I mean, for other people, it could be fears or harm to others, whatever. But for me, it was definitely resentment. I just loved being a victim and being resentful. I mean, I just loved it. That was me. And doing the step work allowed me to look at my own part, as opposed to being a laundry list of all the wrongs that have been done to me. Looking at my own part in either causing certain life events or in making them last longer than they should have, or even if I had no part, you know, my choice to hang on to something is a choice to do that. And, you know, these were the things, besides the physical aspect, that were driving me to eat, you know, amongst other things. You know, the other thing that I think that sort of looking at compulsive overeating through an alcoholic mindset was, I sort of remembered, okay, when you're drunk, you're supposed to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. So, you know, we don't have that, but I certainly made a point to go to as many meetings as I possibly could. Certainly, I would say that four meetings a week I was probably going to. And it was a very good thing for me for two reasons. One was, a few reasons. One was it helps to start in developing the fellowship, which is a huge, huge support. And, you know, I had been a very isolated person, a very angry person. I mean, when I did my eating, I was home alone, and I was eating every day. So do the math. So to have this new fellowship with people that I knew and people that I could call, I mean, that was a very powerful thing. And because I came in as an atheist, I had to use the fellowship at first to be my higher power because I didn't have anything else. And it was fine as a start, you know, it's fine. Because I understood, you know, I have to be intellectual about everything. And I figured, well, when there's a group dynamic, you can do things that you couldn't do when you were by yourself. So that was a start. And of course, according to the, you know, whatever. So that was enough for me to start. You know, the other thing is I got to hear from folks who had good recovery and to hear about what they had to say. And that is always a good thing. And I'm always grateful for that. And I always hear something in a meeting. But, you know, when you put it all together, going to all those meetings, you hear really good stuff. And people's words do come back to me. I mean, some of them are profound and some of them are not. I remember one of the first meetings I went to, someone was sharing about when she had first come in and she was trying to follow the food plan and she was hungry and uncomfortable, and her sponsor said, "So what?" So I always remember that, "So what?" So I'd be like hungry, "Oh man, I really felt so hungry, so what?" You know, just kind of laugh. So that was pretty funny. And then I used to get upset because of my food thoughts. You know, I was like, "Oh my God, this is crazy!" You know, I'm having these food thoughts. I don't know if it's like a Catholic thing because thoughts count. But then I heard someone say, "You know, thinking is not eating. I mean, it's worth to take note if I'm thinking, but it's not eating. So it's, you know, keep calm and carry on, right?" And there's so many just amazing stories, you know, that I've heard. And I definitely, you know, I've definitely done some of the stereotypical stupid things that newcomers do. In other words, I heard everyone say, "It's not about the weight, it's not about the weight." And I was like, "Okay, it's not about the weight, but I need to lose some weight right now because I can't fit into my clothes and blah, 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 blah." And I suppose to the credit of my first sponsor, I think, I don't even know, but she tolerated, we made it, we struck a deal. I was like, "Look, I just need to lose some weight to fit into my work clothes, then we can focus on the rest of the stuff." And she tolerated that, and I guess it worked out okay because it kept me on track well enough. And it really isn't. I'm not. I don't know if I'm superficial or whatever, but you know, it took. Well, I'll take that back. None of the above. I think that recovery and step work is ongoing, and you know, I've heard people say, "Oh, it's like peeling an onion." But it's true. It really is true. And it's a constant process. So, you know, it comes in like little pieces. You know what I mean? It's not like, you know, even now, I mean, I've lost a lot of weight. I lost 85 pounds. That doesn't mean much. I mean, is it progress? It is progress in the sense that when I came in, I could not lose weight because I couldn't stop eating. But, you know, the fact that I know how to diet, that in and of itself is not recovery. It really isn't. And I do understand that. And I have had changes. Like a small example that I'll give you, and some of them have been, I didn't even ask for them. They were given to me by my higher power. So for Thanksgiving, I went to my brother's house. And historically, me and my brother have fought like cats and dogs. And you know, this year I went down there, I brought my lunch. I'm sure they thought I was insane, but I was like, there's no way. This is my schedule, I'm having my lunch, and if they think it's weird, they can think it's weird, whatever. So I went, sat down, had my lunch, I don't care. And then, you know, had dinner, I had planned my dinner, stuck to my dinner, no problem. But the thing that I didn't notice until after I left was I didn't fight with my brother. Now, he's still as big an ass as he's ever been. He, was talking about politics and the Syrians and blah, 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 and how, whatever, all this stuff. So I just sat there and, you know, I listened. And so then, because I was no fun, he was picking a fight with his teenage daughter, and she took the bait. So they were fighting, blah, 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 global warming, you know, we had to cover it all. And then, so I just was watching, and it wasn't like I was, like, biting my tongue. I was just watching. I don't care. And he's like, well, so then he turns to me and he says, well, what do you think? Do you agree with me? And I said, no, I don't agree with anything you said. And that was it. So I was like, wow, you know, like I didn't even identify my brother as a problem, but you know, program has allowed me to interact, to not respond, to not be so, to stop controlling or trying to control people. Because, I mean, that is one of my big things, you know, and I spend a lot of time upstairs here thinking about what other people should be doing, and sometimes it comes out of my mouth, and I'm sure that's a real pleasure to hear. And it's something that I still struggle with, but now I'm aware of it, you know, and if I do it, you know, I can go back to that person and apologize, and certainly, you know, say to myself, okay, you gotta cut that out. And I guess the one thing I haven't mentioned, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it because we're almost out of time, but the higher power thing, which, you know, I could talk about for whatever, a day, is definitely an evolving process. But, you know, I read the big book, and I certainly read We Have Agnostics many, many, many times because I was concerned because I thought, I don't know about this. I do not have a personal relationship with Jesus. And, you know, I just didn't believe in a personal God who could really give a shit. So I had to work really hard on the higher power thing. And I guess the challenge that I gave myself was, because program allows our higher power to be of our own conception, if I can't come up with a higher power, that's my bad, not God's bad. You know, and so I've really done a lot of reading. I've tried to listen to what other people have to say about their higher power. I have, my current sponsor has told me to pray, and I do, but this time it's not, oh, please give me, please let me, please give me, you know what I mean? So now it's, you know, thy will, not mine, prayer. And in terms of seeing, you know, my higher power, I do believe in a higher power. I've had to let go of my old conceptions and let new ones come in and foster and support the evidence that I see for a higher power. And sometimes I see that in terms of the people who have come into my life. Sometimes I see that into changes, I guess, that have come about in myself. You know, for example, the miracle of me not fighting with my brother. I didn't ask God, please spare me from him. It just happened. And I, you know, that's from a higher power. That's from program. I have no explanation for that. You know, there's a lot of things I have no explanation for. You know, how did I go from not being able to get through a day to having, I don't know how many days it is, but I don't know, more than a year of abstinence. I can't explain that. I have no explanation for that except for to say that like the big book says, if we seek him, he will come. It's not that hard to find if you look for him. And I spent a lot of time, you know, debating why there was, I'm saying him, but you know, whatever. You know, rationalizing why there couldn't be a higher power. And now I consciously stop myself. If I ever have those thoughts, I do thought stopping. I stop. And I'm like, well, let me look at the things that are amazing. And, you know, I always give this example. The human body itself is so amazing, like, from what little I do know. And nature and all that stuff and wonderful things that happen. So I make room for my higher power, and it's, you know, it's something that I have to do, very much like planning my food every day, and that's, but it's okay because it works. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
What a great way to celebrate an anniversary.